All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you know, I was up to 3 o'clock this morning. And so for those who don't know, I generally get up at 5 to plan the show and then make my way here to Waukesha to do the show. But my wife, as I was, preparing to go to sleep, came in hysterically and said, our son's car had gotten shot up. And I got to tell you, when you're trying to fall asleep and you hear that, it's not easy to get back to sleep, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Especially in today's times and environments where people are just reckless with weapons. And so he was caught in a crossfire, and his vehicle was hit.
You said the police said how many shots were in the...
I think they said it was about 26 shots that were fired, automatic weapons, shooting at one another. His car just happened to be coming through. And so only through grace was he not impacted or affected by it physically. So vehicles you can replace. But that's, when you live in areas, and this is what I'd like the listening audience to really kind of think a little bit about what it would be like to live in a community or live in an area where just driving, you at any point in time. I'm going to have the chief of police on, I think, in the next couple of weeks. I had a meeting with him. It might have been last week or a week before last. And we had a nice long conversation. He's a friend of mine. I knew him from a different time before he became a police chief. And so they've got a major plan that they are going to implement in the city this in the coming months, a plan that they've taken over a year to put in place. And at the root of all of it, Sandy, again, is people have weapons. They have guns, man.
Yeah, automatic weapons. I did some research over the weekend. We should apologize to Dave because his data about Mexico was right. Their murder rate is 26.5 per 100,000. But there are about 8 major cities in this country that have murder rates higher than that. We talk about Mexico being this lawless place that's dangerous to go to, and yet with all the guns we have in America, we've created a whole bunch of places in America, and including, I'm sure, the zip code undoubtedly where this shooting happened to your son's car. We in Milwaukee have an area that is certainly as dangerous as Mexico, more dangerous than Mexico in terms of the danger associated with it, and it's because of guns. It's not because of people. It's people with guns that are causing the problems. It's horrible. I remember my twins when they were in high school went to stay overnight at a friend's house down in the city in a neighborhood that had some problems, and when they were there, they heard gunshots. And the kid they were staying with wasn't that fazed by it because it was normal.
Well, gunshots is a formal situation that occurs not only in the city of Milwaukee but in urban centers across the nation. And yet we live in the country that can't stop that. This is what gets me about it all, Sandy, is. We are talking about, what's going on in Ukraine. We're talking about what's going on in Taiwan eventually. But for heaven's sakes, let's do something about what happens in the cities every day. The terror that rains down in cities and how people have to live their lives in America. So Dave talked about Mexico. That's Mexico. Mexico's not America.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the wealthiest nation on earth should be able, we should be able to, with the most powerful militaries, the reason that we can't control these things again, Sandy, whether people want to accept it or not, out of guns. The guns are the reason. Well, you know, well, the people, I have guns and I'm not doing that. Well, you may be one who doesn't have. One of the things that I know they're going to be doing in Milwaukee with this plan that the mayor and the chief of police have put together is when people come into the city, for instance, to watch a Buck game or come into the city to go to Summerfest, their cars are ransacked, windows are busted, guns are taken out of those vehicles because people don't feel safe when they come into the city. They bring their guns. Well, it turns out that when you do that, you know, you wind up losing the gun anyway because there are people who know that people are coming into the city and bringing their guns for protection, and they're breaking into their vehicles, and they're stealing the guns anyway. So, you know, I don't know other than you can't blame it on the police. You can't blame it on the mayor. You may be able to blame it on the people who do this, but if they didn't have access to a high-powered weapon, they couldn't be shooting at somebody else and innocent people get caught in the crossfire.
I mean, there's no question that there will always be people who act out of bounds, and the question is whether people who act out of bounds can carry guns, and that out-of-bounds behavior can involve shooting one or multiple people. And I think that's the big difference, that we just, you know, guns aren't going to cure the notion that people act out of bounds, because that's the nature of mankind and the nature of society.
Right.
But having guns in everyone's hands is only going to increase the degree in which we kill one another.
Well, the fact that debate is still going on is only because if people who push for that debate had loved ones who have been impacted and affected by it, if you yourself own weapons and automatic weapons and you haven't been impacted by that, but somebody else whose loved ones have been impacted by it, you see it in a different light.
I'm confident. Right. I've got a friend who's an pediatric emergency room physician, and he is death on guns because what does he see? He sees young people coming in with the trauma wounds.
Yeah, torn up.
Trauma wounds that you would only see in a war zone. And that's occurring in hospitals all across the country. And people who see this, it's like going to war and coming back. And people who go to war don't come back gung-ho about going to war. You know, that's not that the normal reaction is they come back and it's like, oh, my God, it's hell. And we've got to do something to avoid those in the future. And people who get affected in the city by guns, I think, have a different view about guns than the people who simply think about them as some kind
of... Oh, yeah, so clearly there are far too many guns, and we don't have to harp on it long because I don't think, Sandy, that there's ever going to be a time when that stops, right? It's only going to increase more because apparently the people with the NRA and in those areas have somehow been able to get politicians to agree that, you know, it's the right thing to do with having all these guns. But anyway, I digress. Sandy, wanted to talk about what's taking place, and you and I have talked about this on more than one occasion, about Russia and China and Iran joining forces. Now, I don't think any of us could have ever imagined, Sandy, maybe you, but I don't think I would have ever imagined China and Russia joining forces. you know, and being brought together. But China and Russia and Iran, right now, the conversations, and they're all in conversations. And so something brought them to the table. What do you think brought them to the table?
Well, I think it was their mutual, the situation each of them have, which might each of them be different, with the United States. You know, the United States ends up being a unifying force. We talk about how Russia has unified NATO, like hasn't occurred before. Well, the United States is unifying a lot of people in terms of their view that they don't want to be subject to, for instance, the possibility of being sanctioned, so that the United States dollar is so important that being sanctioned by the United States can be very troublesome economically. China does not want to be in a position to be vulnerable to being sanctioned. Either do the Mideast countries, okay? And so, one thing that brings this up, I think we're going to a break shortly, but is the China just brokered a peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which was sort of an unthinkable, if not a peace, at least they brokered diplomatic relations between them.
So, Sandy, why don't you hold that thought? We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. As Monday's with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Man. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams and CJ. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. And I do mean thank you for taking my call. Before you cut me off here,
if you stick with what we're talking about, you won't get cut off. If you try to change the subject, no, you don't. If you try to change the subject,
you don't like my answer.
No, not if you're going to change the subject.
My answer, but I always do.
Let's deal with today, man. Go ahead.
Here's another example. Well, you know, I'm going to actually do something rare. I'm going to praise the president for promising to overturn Washington, D.C.'s counseled crime bill, if you want to call it that. He actually promised to override that abysmal policy. And it proved once again, Democrats are weak on crime. Because if you read that policy, it weakens consequences for criminals, and that's something Mandela Barnes promised to
okay
do.
So listen man, you know, to say Democrats across the board are weak on crime is just not true. You know, you can make the statement a million times, it still doesn't make it true. As you know, and Republicans are not weak on crime, as if it's all predicated on whether somebody's a Democrat or a Republican. That's just not true, man. And if you, and it, even though you try to simplify it as much as you do, it still doesn't make it true.
Well, and actually, just one other thing. And last week, Friday, I think, you see, Jake, if we could just get off talking about election politics, Democrats versus Republicans, we haven't, Earl and I haven't talked once about, I don't think we've used either term, Republican or Democrat, this morning in our discussion. We've been talking about bank issues. We just talked about a situation that his son had in the city of Milwaukee and guns. But so, you know, I don't understand the compulsion to turn every conversation into a polarized discussion of Democrats versus Republicans and to raise our voice because we're angry at them. So, you know, I think we just you know, I think people would be much happier to receive your call if your calls involve that kind of discussion rather than what we always get reduced to.
Well, you guys can deny the fact. Your party's in control, has been in control.
Okay, here we go.
Speak for themselves. You want to deny it, Sandy?
No, I'm not denying.
Read the facts and the numbers. It's not about my call. It's about I come with facts. You want to hear some facts?
No, we really
don't want to hear your facts. Thank you very much for the call. You know. I want to get back, Sandy, to what has taken place with what's happening globally right now, with the fact that China and Russia, and now Iran, that those three nations, which now all appear to be enemies, major enemies to the United States, and the fact that the three of them seem to think that we've got the same thing in common. We've got the United States that is in some way, shape, or form threatening us. That's basically what they're saying.
Well, yeah, I think with our sanctioning, we've sanctioned Iran. We've talked about sanctioning China. We've sanctioned Russia. We've tried to sanction them to the hilt. So we've proven that having the U.S. dollar as a world currency is something we might use as a weapon. And weaponizing our currency makes it less likely that every country in the world will be interested in having our currency be the world currency that they carry out their transactions in. One of the reasons that our currency is the world currency relates back to Richard Nixon's deal with Saudi Arabia, that Saudi Arabia would only buy and sell its oil and gas in dollars, in transactions denominated in dollars, led to something called the petrodollar, so that oil and gas in the Mideast is now sold universally in transactions denominated in dollars. This kind of move by China ends up, I didn't realize this, is the biggest customer of Mideastern oil in the world. That gives them lots of, you know, people are very good to their biggest customer, and that gives China a great deal of influence in the Mideast, and they're going to exercise it. They've announced that their foreign policy is one of brokering relationships between countries without tinkering inside the country with how they manage themselves, which is something that, of course, the United States is frequently accused of. And so they're basically approaching these things in a very benign fashion, talking to Iran and Saudi Arabia. You know, if Saudi Arabia decides to move away from using the dollar for its transactions and decides to use, for instance, the market basket of currencies that Russia's trying to put together to be a replacement world currency, China's announced its desire to not have the dollar be the world currency. And why would any country necessarily want to be beholden to another country for the purpose of carrying out all of its transactions?
So, Sandy, if you can hold that thought, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So I think we have
on the wings of love.
show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789 is Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, more and more things are pointing in the direction, that the tides are kind of changing with the way this nation is, a world, is going to be in the future. You see the signs. And at the head of the world in the coming decades is not going to be America.
Well, you know,
outside of militarily.
You know, there was the whole Cold War was a period of the world being bipolar with the USSR on the one hand and the United States on the other, and we had bipolar major powers. And then when with the collapse of the USSR, we ended up with a unipolar situation with the United States being the sole remaining world power for a while. And we developed a concept of ourselves, I think it was basically the neocon philosophy, that the United States would exert what I call hegemony, this world influence over the whole world. And we would basically correct the ills of the world as we saw fit. And we began to do that. We interfered with, you know, we introduced ourselves into Iraq to do nation building there. And we conducted it covertly and overtly in a variety of places in the world. And we would meddle with the internal affairs of places, talking about whether they essentially deserve to be run the way they were. We talked about Russia, getting rid of Putin in Russia. We didn't like his leadership, so maybe he should wouldn't it be great if he was replaced? And so all of that, we dealt with it internally like it was our position, it was our right, it was our manifest destiny. You know, there used to be this theory of America back in the 1800s that it was our manifest destiny to settle the whole Western Hemisphere, the whole United States, what became the United States, and to bring our civilization, our version of it, to and democratize all of that land. And so, and manifest destiny was the rule of the day. We're now behaving as if it's our manifest destiny to exert this same kind of influence over the world, but the world is occupied and is increasingly occupied by people who are not interested in living in a unipolar world. They wanted a bipolar or multipolar world in which the power of their own countries is recognized. China, Russia, India, we've got a bunch of developing countries, Brazil, and we've got the BRIC countries who are demonstrating their impatience with a unipolar world of America. The BRIC countries, involve Russia, India, China, Brazil. These countries have gotten into coordinating with one another, and China's beginning to exert its world influence. It's the biggest customer or the biggest provider to a whole bunch of countries in the world. That kind of relationship creates lots of influence. And so China is clearly another polar power in the world, and for the United States to behave as if the world remains a unipolar world in which the United States is the whole game is just, it's denying reality. And it's denying reality in a way which could prove very troublesome for America. The trouble we have is that if the dollar is no longer the world currency, we have many problems.
You know, and all I can do is think about Cuba. And a nation that we continue to, without any common sense, isolate a nation that is right there on our doorstep. And yet because of a man who's long since gone, we can't seem to realize that it would make sense to create, trading partners with Cuba, amongst other things. Cubans can do and offer a lot of different things that can make life a little bit better for our country. But yet we can't get beyond the fact that Fidel Castro was once there and he's a threat, as if Cuba is some kind of threat to our nation. Well, but it's that mentality, Sandy, that I think that we can't get beyond that blinds us when it comes to China and other places. We've still got that part of whatever that is in us. And it's not the American people, but it's our government.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that we would punish Cuba, this small country neighboring us, for the way they govern themselves. When we weren't punishing Cuba when they were governed by a dictator, but we decided to punish Cuba when it was governed by a socialistic regime, and to isolate it. And we seem to have developed this notion of sanctions and economic isolation to the hilt, so that we isolate Iran. When you isolate a country, you're more likely to keep it at arm's length from yourself and to have an enemy, not a friend. When you allow these countries to be assimilated into the world economy, we find out the extent to which things moderate and soften. China, when it was communist China under Mao Zedong, was a very off-limits place. We recognize the country. We allow it to come into the World Trade Organization. We find now that China is a part of the world economy, and whereas its government might not be exactly as we would like it to be, it's a very successful country, and it's a relatively peaceful country. We've not been at war with China. China hasn't been at war with anybody, as far as I can tell, other than some border skirmishes with India. And so, the world is different than we treat it, and our treatment of it with such unilateral exertion of economic power is not going to work well in the long run.
So neither Democrat nor Republican are going to change what seems to be inevitable, this inevitable collision with China and Russia and Iran, whether it's 10 years from now, whether it's 5 years from now. It's pretty inevitable that we're going to have a collision. Barring some unforeseen miracle, that somebody is going to come in and change the trajectory of where we're headed.
Well, my concern is that both parties seem to have it wrong right now, that both parties are looking at our foreign policy with this sort of unipolar concept of America uber alles, essentially. And that policy threatens us in a couple of ways. One, it could lead to military confrontations that would be exceedingly expensive in blood and treasure, and or it leads to the loss of the dollar as the world currency, which will have tremendous ramifications within our economy, within the ability of our economy to withstand and to be resilient, to withstand the business cycle. It will create a much bigger burden of our national debt. The size of our national debt currently is can be handled quite easily because of the ease with which we sell our treasury bonds to the world. When we aren't a world currency, there'll be much less interest in that.
So let's say the impact that will happen to the average everyday person if we don't have, and the dollar's not the world economy anymore.
World currency.
World currency anymore.
Well, what impact does it have? First of all, our treasury instruments are held by the world at large, and the world wants to buy our treasury instruments because
stability?
Well, no, it's the stability of the currency. So the currency is used as the, if oil is bought and sold in dollars, then people who buy and sell oil, when they sell oil and get dollars, they aren't going to convert the dollars back into their natural currency. They're going to hold the dollars because they know they're going to turn around and buy oil tomorrow. So they don't want to take a currency exchange risk over and over again. They're just going to hold dollars. When they hold dollars, they invest those dollars in the U.S. financial markets, which are all denominated in dollars. So our U.S. financial markets are strongly dependent upon the U.S. dollar being the world currency for the scale of investment in our financial markets. And if it isn't the world currency, our financial markets will become much less important. And our financial markets becoming much less important will decrease the level of prosperity in this country across the board.
You know, Sandy, the increasing clout of China in the Middle East, and certainly, you know, we've got some impact in things that in the Middle East, as we've had for a long, long time. What is China offering differently than we are offering to sway Middle Eastern nations to swing in their direction and not in the United States?
Well, what happened most recently was China talked Iran and Saudi Arabia into deciding they would open diplomatic relationships with each other. So they brokered something that has the potential to broker something like a peace in the long run between the two countries by getting them to talk to one another formally. What power do they have? Well, they're the biggest customer of oil. People respect the biggest customers. They listen to them. China also, I think, has decided to be this broker for international affairs without tinkering in internal affairs. And so, China has the capacity to sell. You know, one of the reasons Saudi Arabia is such a close mate and ally of the United States is that we sold weapons to them and armed them to the teeth and made them powerful from a military standpoint, the most powerful Mideastern country. We did that, I think, in exchange for their implicit promise to have Israel's back and to keep Israel safe from the rest of the Arab countries. But China has the capacity to arm countries just as easily as we do and is developing an industry capability of doing that. So China has everything to offer these countries that we do, and in some respects more because they're their biggest customer.
You know, Sandy, at the end of this road, you know, is not something that we'll look back on. There'll be people, historians, who look back on this time, right?
Sure.
Because these decisions will have lasting impact for generations.
Absolutely. And, you know, the fact is that if we got smart fast, we could secure a very important role in the world, and we could also secure the financial capacity of this country and secure prosperity for our people. But if we pursue this incorrectly, if we set ourselves and set the world up for being at loggerheads with one another, in militarily, economically, just yesterday I heard the discussion of a arms race between the United States and China. So we're already starting to talk about getting into an arms race with China. Well, you know, it's going to be very expensive. And that kind of expense sucked out of our economy is going to be a real problem. And, you know, everyone looks at the USSR and understands why it collapsed. They were trying to carry military capacity well beyond the capacity of their economy.
You know, Sandy, after all those things are said and done, we've kind of reinvented a Cold War. I mean, Cold War had died.
Yeah.
Right? And here we are on the precipice of creating and bringing this back. I just for the life of me don't understand. You know, maybe it's an illusion to think that there can be peace. But if you don't try for it, right? If you don't do something to create peace, we're going to continue to wind up where we are.
Well, to be honest with you, it seems like all of our efforts are in the direction of creating hostility rather than peace. You know, we keep kind of beating the drums with respect to the two of the other major powers in the world. And it's us beating the drum, and then we hear drum echoes, and so now we've got this constant drumming going on.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you wanted to say.
Well, yeah. You know, we were talking about the United States trying to exert all this unilateral power over the world. And for instance, exerting a great deal of energy to try and maintain a coalition against Russia for the Ukrainian war. And so, and holding together the European Union allies, the NATO allies. Just yesterday, I think it was reported, or last week it was reported, that the EU and the United States have solved this spat they were having over subsidies for renewable electric vehicles and subsidies for renewable energy. And the United States solved this basically by capitulating, by saying, okay, we're gonna back off on this and we'll give you all these same subsidies. And so we should understand that one of the reasons we might have backed off so quickly is because our negotiating leverage is affected by our desire to hold this group together for the purpose of its sanctions against Russia. We're asking them to basically hurt themselves in these sanctions. The oil and gas sanctions hurt Europe much more than it hurt the United States. And so when we're trying to forge, for instance, military alliances, it forces us to take different positions on economic issues. And so these things all play in together. And so when we overreach in one area, we might find out that we don't then exert the same kind of influence or power that we would or should in some other area, like economics and like the ability to support the renewable industry being located in the United States, and we have to capitulate because we can't create tension, any more tension with Europe, because there's enough tension already over these other sanctions. And this kind of thing exists in all different directions. So we're trying to forge military alliances, but we have to support them with economic kinds of concessions. And so it costs us money, not just in our military budget, but it costs us power and authority in the world of economics as well. And we're buying and we're trading all the time. And if we take something here, we're going to have to give something there. And we should understand that a great deal of what we're asking the rest of the world to do, to stick by us on our positions on all these things across the world, is asking them to do something that we're going to have to give them something for.
Well, the rest of the world, Sandy, I don't think wants to choose sides, right?
Right.
I mean, it would make sense that you would want to remain independent of things, because, again, the Cold War is over, or should have been over. But now we're forcing nations to choose.
Right.
You know, if you join us, if you come with us, this is what we'll do for you. And those nations want independence.
I mean, we could find in the long run that there'd be a multipolar world in which the European Union would stand as a group, Russia and possibly China and India together as a group, the United States, and maybe Japan, you know, with tight alliances. But, you know, I think the United States is foolish to think that they should try to exert all the power and to spend all of what they'll have to spend to hold together a unipolar world that is basically bowing to America, because it's an impossible burden.
So you brought up a nation that we don't hear much about at all, and that's Japan. And I think Japan is starting to exert itself a little more than it has been over the last five decades.
Yeah. Japan is one of, I think, the five biggest economies in the world. It still remains a very big economic force in the world, and it's kind of been asleep.
Yeah, I mean, as far as you know, America and being a part of you know, supporting America all along the way, I think Japan is finally starting to try to show a little independence.
Well, I think a lot of countries have tried to show independence from us, and I think that the EU right now is lining up with us over Ukraine, but they've had to suffer a great deal in the process. And I think in the long run, it's altogether possible that the EU will consider itself an independent bloc and exert itself in that fashion.
So after this is all said and done, Sandy, again, we won't see any change, whether there's a Democrat or a Republican in office. That's the part of it that I think it makes it so so dangerous for us, because it's almost as if both sides see the one vision. It's we're the great United States of America, whether it's Democrat or Republican. And we're going to remain that.
Yeah, I mean, Manifest Destiny's got a lot of appeal. It appealed to Americans for 50 or 60 years in the 19th century, and I think this concept of world manifest destiny is appealing to us in some fashion. But it's going to be a potentially very destructive direction that we're going
in. But, Sandy, it may be appealing to us, but these other nations in their citizenry—
mm-hmm.
aren't benefiting from that.
Well, I think that they're doing what's in their self-interest so far, and so far I think we've made things in the self-interest of Europe, for interest, based on, but in the long run, self-interest is going to recede to something much closer to self-interest, and the United States is not going to be able to make demands on other, particularly if we aren't the world currency. I cannot overstate the importance of being the world currency and the extent to which it gives America clout. And if we lose world currency status, we will lose a great deal of clout.
You know, Sandy, the European nations and America in the world is not in the European nations and America. What I mean by that is, you know, your American European nations, very small segment of the globe, right?
Right. Population-wise, I suppose it's under 12% or some such thing. The two of them together, yeah.
So the rest of the world joins forces, Sandy, and it leaves us on the outside looking in. And that's the fear, right?
Yeah. I mean— Yeah, I think the fear is that the policy itself is going to destroy our relationships with a bunch of countries and create an arm's length situation that will be very expensive to us as taxpayers and will cause us not to pay attention to the problems that are internal to America that need to have attention paid to them.
All right, we got to leave it there for now. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, everybody who made the show go. We'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.